ifs and timing as well, and that the commissioner shall give the individual an opportunity. So that's, now we're putting that in the jurisdiction of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. As long if they're in the same place, that would be nice on some of these things.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Well, that's...
You're saying in Section 14, I've got an APD registration, and I got a person complaining to the commissioner about it. Is that what you're saying?
No, we've got a BOLI registration, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Well, the whole thing is extremely confusing to me.
That we tried for months to figure, I tried for months with the interim committee to figure out how to put all this together in one agency and came up empty-handed. It can't be done under our contract with the federal government. APD has a responsibility for health and safety under federal law, and we operate or in compliance with federal law, and it operates under a contract with the federal government. BOLI has, and it has to be an employer-employee relationship in order for them to have jurisdiction. Many farm labor camps don't demonstrate an employer-employee relationship.
So then they have to go under BOLI.
So somebody else has to have jurisdiction in those camps. And in other camps, there's substantial doubt. You can't show clearly one way or the other. The other thing is licensing operators for camps is not part of APD's mission. It's not health and safety. Instead, it's compliance with a broad range of laws, including wage and hour and child labor and paying people on time, as well as following health and safety laws. So we've tried, Camille, I tried to figure out how to put these responsibilities together and came up empty-handed.
Let me suggest that that Senator Hill and that Mr. McCulley work through it with you and see if we can't come to an agreement where we all understand who's doing what to whom.
That's what we need, is an understanding of
you just want
where
what, you
who's
want a
shooting
flow chart to see who's doing what in what circumstances.
Can I suggest, Mr. Chairman, the pre-occupancy inspection is supposed to be one way for the two agencies to come to you and say, on a consultative basis, with no punitive action possible, saying, okay, here's what you have to do here with wages, and here's what you have to do here with health and safety to stay out of hock. And if you do these things, you're okay. But if you violate them, you're not okay. You may get fined. Provide that information. And what you're saying is that as long as we've got a bunch of agencies, two in particular, Bureau of Labor and Industries and Accident Prevention Division, you sure as hell would like to know what each one is supposed to be doing and where the jeopardy is for the camp operator. And I think that's a real fair request. And we might want to put in another section of the bill that requires either BOLI or APD to produce a document and distribute that document free of charge to any farmer who wants it, itemizing, or a packet of documents. I know APD has a handout, and I know BOLI has a handout. Put the damn things together and give them to the farmer and say, this is where the responsibilities are for each agency, this is each agency's mission, and here's the range of things that you're dealing with as a farm labor camp operator, and some way that you can look at them side by side to understand them.
Yeah, that would be most helpful because, you know, right now we think we know what the rules are. And again, in Hood River and the Mid-Columbia, we are extremely concerned about disincentives to provide farm labor housing. And as it gets more complicated and more difficult and more expensive, we will choose not to provide it. And I don't think that is what we want to have as a result.
No, that's not our outcome. That's not our desire either. We want to make sure that there's clear lines of authority and a very clear understanding on the part of the people who are subject to the law, what's going to happen and when, et cetera.
Because if we know the rules, we can play by them. If we don't, it's hard.
Yep.
And last, a comment on page 11, section 18, number 2, which is on line 7. We, again, following some of the other comments, we are looking at, again, I understand what Senator Hill said regarding enjoin. The fact of the matter is, if a suit is brought, I'm going to have attorney's fees, and chances are I will not be able to collect if I win. This is just more legal liability, and I don't think any of us would appreciate having that in the bill.
Well, we want to have some way to, enforce it.
Does it have to be through the courts? This is, you know.
Well, this is one of the,
this is my question.
This is
Does it have to be through a civil process where I am being sued?
This is where obviously comes after the failure of the operator to do what's required, and they're now having to bring suit to force them to do what they've been asked, ordered, and required to do.
Well,
I think their concern might be any other person.
That is correct. Any other person.
Oh, okay.
That right. The commissioner director, fine, but it's any other person. That, you know, someone gets angry at me and wants to enjoin me, I still have attorney's fees.
Gets back to your question about what was your term of art, aggrieved?
Aggrieved person, and even that, I don't think that
I would prefer a commissioner or director. They're the ones that have been inspecting. They're the ones that have done the pre-occupancy inspection.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the difficulty with that and the reason that any other person is in there is the commissioner and the director are limited, severely limited in their capabilities. The commissioner, I think, has, or the director, has five inspectors.
Well, we could fix that by taking out one other person and jacking the
5 day.
For what? Inspection camp?
For camp inspection.
Five or six, somewhere in there.
Record shows that Senator Hill is yelling questions into the audience to Mr. Pompeo. He is yelling responses back. The mystery voice in the tape is that of the representative of the APD. The alternative, the problem we have is that the alternative is to create a fee system, fee structure so high that it triples or quadruples the number of folks that these agencies have got to give effective kinds of inspection and enforcement.
Well,
to actually be there and to respond to a problem. I just don't know which how do we go? We want to have more government agents and exclude the private right of action. Because we've got to have one or the other. We can't if we were to take out one other person, that would leave us, from at least from my view, in a position where we don't have enough folk to provide adequate, continuous kinds of oversight and enforcement without, you see what I'm saying? You see what my problem is? How do we?
Yeah, but I don't know how to solve it, but I also have a big problem with allowing any other person to sue me.
Chair, it would seem that, and maybe it's in the bill that I don't see it, that there should be a way for the any other person to be able to complain or seek the assistance of APD or the Bureau to take this action.
They can do it now.
Okay.
Then
if the Bureau has a backlog of 8 months, or even let's they're on the fast track, they've only got a backlog of 3 months to respond to non-critical complaints. 3 months is a long time.
But Mr. Chair, I think it, from what I understand, it depends the area of the state, too. In meeting with some growers from Jackson County, they get immediate response to problems from APD.
It really depends on the workload.
Yeah.
The
problem we have, though, as you understand, is that I understand what you're saying. You don't want just any person, one of those people that get off the bus, that bus loads of authorized persons are coming out to your property, they get out there and said, aha, I'm going to sue Camille. We don't want that to happen.
Well, wait a minute.
I know. Well, the problem is, though, if we take out any other person and allow them to go to the commissioner's director and get them to push their button, which they can do under current law, we have got to, as a matter of conscience, I think, find a way to give the commissioner and the director the additional person power to actually give timely and therefore effective enforcement.
Mr. Chairman?
That's where I think we get caught.
Let me poke around with this a little bit. What would that person be suing about? Certainly a violation of 17, I would guess.
Violation of field sanitation requirements, violation of health and safety requirements.
Well, now let's see, it's a violation of this act, right?
The act requires the camp operator to comply with
any
health and
safety
law.
Senator Cairns, you have some such things as, for example, I mean, you can sue under any of those things. Those are there. That is a lot of different.
Yeah, we don't want to. We don't want to give anybody a right to join some violation of an administrative provision, failure to properly apply for an endorsement, or failure to post a proper bond. Or it doesn't seem to me that we want to give anybody the right to go after that kind of thing. What we're talking about, I assume, is to give people the right to go after some violation that's on the ground.
But, sir.
Yeah.
That could be, for example, I had a violation last year that, of course, I caught. My workers all of a sudden had four fighting roosters within 200 feet of the cabins. That is a violation under APD rules, and any other person, if this stands as it is, mm-hmm. could complain and sue me with that Section 18.
Ms. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
I don't know why they would, because they're going to have to get an attorney. Well, sure, somebody could sue you right now for anything.
But
I could sue somebody for anything. Anybody could sue me for anything. The reason I don't get sued every day is because it costs the other person a heck of a lot of money. Unless their attorney's working on a contingency basis, and no attorney's going to work on a contingency basis unless they think they're going to win some attorney's fees, unless there's a good case.
Well,
I think we need to look at that more closely.
I
don't know that you've swayed the majority of the committee yet, but you, and along with others, have highlighted that as a hot spot in the bill, which needs further consideration.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Just to flag it, flag my interest in it, I think that language like this, maybe not this exact language, but language similar to this, that allows a private right of action to at least an aggrieved party is essential to supplement the ability of the various agencies, primarily APD and Boley, enforcing the law. It's really critical.
I don't disagree with you. I think there may be a couple of ways to go. Senator Shoemaker is also obviously correct that we don't want people, any other person, to simply have a statutory right of private action and some damages collectible at the other end for merely administrative kinds of problems or things which are, you know, the kinds of petty, malicious, frivolous, you know, et cetera, kinds of problems which might arise. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
The witnesses said, yes. And that's where we got a cure.
Yes, if you could further define it, for example, and make some parameters on it, that would certainly be better, and if, you know, agree something. But right now, it's just too broad.
Okay. We might, we'll scull on it. Thank you. I'll ask counsel to take a look at the letter from Mr. Nelson. I assume his remarks are directed at the Dash 3, is that correct?
That's correct.
And his are primarily the same issues you raised?
I think he raises some others.
Okay, well, I'll have counsel take a look at this. Let's see. How about Mr. Pompey? Want to come up and join us? Good bill should pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jack Pompey. I'm administrator of the Accident Prevention Division. I'm here to discuss a few of my concerns and go on record for the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 732. First of all, I'd like the chair to understand that we're working closely with the committee administrator and the committee to work out differences. Our differences in this bill.
Appreciate that.
And I would briefly like to just go through the bill and my concerns. It'll be very brief.
Good.
About my business. Page 6, Section 6, I feel that number 2, line 2, you either delete the commissioner's name for preoccupancy and put the director of DIF.
You're operating on Dash 3.
Dash 3, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we know where it is.
We'll translate.
It's the sub 3. Upon receipt of an application for registration, the commissioner shall conduct a preoccupancy inspection.
Either omit the commissioner's name or word and put the director of DIF, or put both director of DIF
commissioner.
I strongly suggest that you change preoccupancy inspection to preoccupancy consultation. The APD will not be in an inspection mode. We will be consulting, and at no charge. By law, we are not allowed to charge for our consultative service, and I want to go on record to say that. That's what's mandated by our OSHA Act.
Okay. Ms. Chairman?
Senator Hill.
I would bet that that's okay with the commissioner. You guys,
good.
I don't see any problem with those two changes, Ms. Chairman.
Done.
And it's very strong, you know, that I want to go on record for the no charge because we're not in the business of...
Great.
Page 7.
Well, Ms. Chairman, on the charge, if there was a charge, the charge wouldn't go for your portion of the inspection because your portion of the inspection would be paid for out of other funds. It would have to go to the other portion of the inspection, which would be Boley's expenses because they don't have another funds account.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, I appreciate
that
clarification.
Page 7.
Page 7, and I may be wrong on these subsections. I just got the bill myself. Line 19, subsection F, requires health and safety sanitation matters be made to the division or the bureau. I discussed this with the administrator. I see no need the bureau because they're going to have to contact us. Plus, we spend $25,000 in the APD to do hazard communication brochures in 11 different languages. We do OSHA posters and we do field sanitation in both languages.
Okay, so you're going to be responsible for this poster.
Well, we already do it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so it'll be your picture.
Well, I mean, not the fancy poster that we may want. We may have to redesign one, Mr. Pictures. Chair.
It'll have whose picture will be on it?
I hope mine. I'm on record.
Well, I think we need both the director and the commissioner shaking hands up in the corner with all the information.
Appreciate that. So, page 9, section 10, I would hope that the chairman of this committee would afford me and the APD the same legislative intent as you did in 731. I do not feel that the commissioner can assess penalties for sections 3 to 18 due to the fact that section 7 is our rule 654. And in 731, we made an agreement that, and I think I can quote you because I have the record, that APD ain't going to do Boley's laundry, and Boley ain't going to do APD's laundry.
To which the chair responds, picky. What do you want to take out?
I just think that this is double jeopardy by having us cite and fine employers for violations of field sanitation and
right.
camps, and that
and then have them come around and hammer a civil penalty. The same thing.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And the council.
Would it be sufficient if your interagency agreement addressed who would do what? I mean, do you think you need it in the language of the statute specifically?
Mr. Chair, committee administrator, by law, by the OSHA law, we have to cite and fine. We take no back seat or precedent setting for any other state agency.
Okay.
We're in an inspection mode.
So what we need to do is provisions. We need to enumerate the sections, the provisions for the powers given to the commissioner. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what I suggest, Mr. Chairman.
Which would exempt those powers given exclusively to the division.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
We can do that.
Now, Mr. Chairman, in doing
can
that,
we?
I don't have any objection to that, but I do want to point out that violation of the safety and health laws or field sanitation requirements could be the trigger for revocation of the registration of the camp or other activities which Boley would have explicit authority over. So as we work out this language, we need to dovetail it too. That's my point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, thank you. I
but not have the redundancy that you're saying we should not have.
Go ahead.
And on page 10, section 16, line 23, violations of section 3 or 6 of this act is a Class A misdemeanor. I suggest that in 6, section 6 should be 6-1, because I feel very strongly that in a pre-occupancy consultation, to tell an employer what to do, it should not be a misdemeanor. You know, and I feel very strongly that if they do not comply with 6.1, then they are.
Oh, I see. Sure.
I mean, the rest of the section in 6 talks about pre-occupancy, and we're going to classify them as if you ain't done a crime, you don't pay the time, I guess is my philosophical approach, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's perfectly acceptable that's because a hard camp couldn't be registered without compliance with APD standards. So it's if they avoid registration, they would be subject to a Class A misdemeanor.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I thank you for allowing me to go on record with my comments.
Okey-doke. I don't see that Mr. Gray read. Any other questions of the witness? If not, thank you. Ellen Lowe.
Thank you.
I assume the Bureau says good bill should pass and wants to say so on the record at some point? Or? Okay. Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, Associate Director of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. And it was my opportunity to be one of those that participated in what I considered a very open group developing these amendments to Senate Bill 732. I appreciated the opportunity to participate, and I want to commend Sue Hanna particularly for being able to follow up on some of the concepts that we had developed. There are just a couple of sections that I want to highlight, and one in particular, page 10, section 17. I think the thing that bothered me most last summer was when we had to close camps and then we had no adequate housing to provide for those individuals. We had situations where those who closed the camps ended up being criticized. And it was a very unjust kind of criticism. And some of us who participated in providing funding or housing, it wasn't always easy to do so at a short time, in a short notice. And it just seems to me that this is extremely important to the spirit of this act to make sure that when we do carry out the act, that we don't put those who are closing camps in the most impossible situation they found themselves in a number of times last summer. The other section that you have discussed today that I'd just like to mention, section 18 on page 11, the section 2 where you were dealing with the commissioner, director, or any other person, it occurs to me as I sat listening that there are some modifications. I certainly wouldn't want to preclude someone who was with a local health agency, for example, from having access to this particular section. And it would certainly be important that any farm worker who was recruited, induced to come to this camp, even though they didn't stay, would be precluded. And so I think there are some ways to narrow it, but I just, as we do so, I hope that we really look at all making sure that all those agencies, on particularly on a local level, that may have authority to act, that they not be precluded from acting.
Okay, you'll be available to assist the committee members as we work our way through that little.
I surely will.
I think
will.
That's the last knotty problem we have.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. With that, we will close the hearing in quasi-work session on Senate Bill 732 and begin the works hearing on Senate Bill 834. Senator Cease.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jane Cease, and I represent Senate District 10, which is part of Northeast and part of Southeast Portland. And I might not really be appropriate that I'm your first witness because I don't really want to talk about the original bill. I just want to use it. But it's a nice kind of an idea for an amendment. I think you have the amendments.
Yes.
They're the dash one ones.
Yes.
I talked to the city of Portland about the amendments, and I gave a copy to someone. Someone took a copy to the city of Portland. But I just wanted to tell you why I lit upon the bill. After the filing deadline for bills, I got a call from a constituent, and she's a teacher, and she was really irritated because she'd had two calls from a financial investment agency, and they had called her as a teacher, so she asked where they got her name, and they said that they bought a list from the school district. So she called the school district to find out how they gave out her name, and they referred her to Don Jeffries, who's their attorney, who happens to be another constituent of mine, and he cited her a court case that said that their records of employees were open, and the school district sells those lists at cost to buyers. And so about the same time this was happening, we had just sent a bill to the floor of the Senate for Motor Vehicles Division, which would allow a motorist to request that when the division, the Motor Vehicles Division, sells its list to people who want to use them for mailing lists or whatever, that if somebody wanted to ask that they not put their name in the list to sell, that they could do that. And so I just thought that I would find a bill that looked like it was maybe going to do something or wasn't going to do something that amended the right statute.
And think you found it.
And then I sort of looked at this bill and said, I think this might be it, and asked to have amendments drafted. And all they do is say that if a public agency sells a list, then they should have to remove from the list the name of an employee that says, I don't want you to sell my name to people, so I get more junk mail or calls to somebody knowing I'm a teacher and I can make my own investment decisions without all that bother. And then we added a paragraph that said that the agency, before it sells the list, has to tell all of its employees it's doing that, and I don't mind if they have objections.
Great.
That's expensive for them to take care of. Throw that part
take,
out.
No, they can take out the income from the sale of the list. Jack up the price.
So, anyhow, I'm just doing my homework for my constituent, and if the committee is of a mind to help out, that would really be nice.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Questions
of
the witness?
Much.
Appreciate it. Okay. All right. Ms. Bloom, Mr. Williams. Thank you. Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know you're glad to be heard, and we appreciate your patience.
Thank you. I'm Jackie Bloom with the City of Portland, and with me is Tom Williams from our City Attorney's Office. I think today we'll be addressing our bill and not Senator Cease's amendments, but we would like to mention a little amendment which has to do with the way the bill was finally drafted in Legislative Counsel's office, and that is on page 2, line 32, we would like to take out the word action.
And that has been engrossed in the dash one amendments.
It's reflected in the dash one amendments, line 3 of the dash one amendments. It says delete action. So
okay,
they got put together with Senator Cease.
Okay, fine. The City of Portland proposes Senate Bill 834, which provides for exemptions from public records disclosure requirements for personnel discipline action or materials or documents supporting that action. In Portland versus Rice, decided by the Oregon Court of Appeals on December 7, 1988, the court limited exemptions from disclosure under this section of the law to those situations which resulted in the imposition of a disciplinary sanction. It's the city's position that to fully protect the rights of employees, as well as other individuals who participate in personnel investigations, the exemption should apply to materials in files which were subject to personnel disciplinary proceedings regardless of the outcome of the proceeding. The most pointed result of a limited reading of the protection in the law for Portland relates to the city's internal investigations unit. We believe the adequacy of information available to that unit, and hence the quality of its decisions, is most certainly affected by knowledge of employees and witnesses that information provided will be available to the public. I'll turn this over to Tom now.
Ms. Bloom's statement stole a lot of my thunder. I'll try not to get into one of your rabbit holes nor be an officious intermeddler. But Jackie indicated, this request and support for this legislation resulted from this lawsuit. Janice Wilson, who was on the other side of that suit, is here, so you'll hear from her as far as that's concerned. This personnel discipline exemption came in 1985 at the request of one of the public employees' unions. What they were saying was that the public records law and the disclosure requirements was undercutting some of their collective bargaining agreements, and some information which was under the agreement would have been confidential would have to be disclosed because of the public records law. That was the primary reason for the 1985 legislation. That's now in ORS 240.750 pertaining to public employees. And at the same time, the legislature put in this exemption from public disclosure, a personnel discipline action, and as Jackie indicated, or the materials that support that. Judge Rossman said,